Hi there, listeners. Welcome to More Than a Whelan. My name is Sean Ian Whelan, your host, and today I am thrilled to have with me in the studio as a special guest, spoken word superstar,
Abdulrahman Hammoud.
Oh, yeah. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Whelan, a podcast about creative writing written by me, but most importantly, inspired by you. Oh yeah, hello again. Here we are, More Than a Whelan, coming at you from sunny downtown Collingwood in Castaway Studios in the greatest suburb in the world. I'm pretty thrilled to have with me Abdul in the studio today. How are you doing, man?
Good, man. Good to be here. I'm excited.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, we're going to be talking to you about lots of things. You are a spoken word artist, amongst other things, a writer, and the founder of Dirty 30. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But firstly, I want to go way back in the way back machine, and I want to know when the vampire poetry first sunk its teeth into you and infected you with the virus.
Yeah, it's a common question. Hopefully, I can say this on enough podcasts that I'm never asked that ever again. It's part of my Wikipedia page that I don't have yet. I was like many people, many kids in the 90s and the thousands, the early thousands, rap and hip hop was kind of blowing up a little bit. And I thought I could be Eminem. So I used to write raps and I used to really enjoy doing that. And I still do every now and then. That was like the thing to do then.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was doing that, and then a friend of mine when I was about 16 showed me a Def Jam poetry video on YouTube, and I was like, this is interesting. It's hip-hoppy, but it's very free-flowing. Like, you don't have to adhere to a beat, and I like that. I thought, you know what, I can do that. So I started doing it, and 2 years later when I was 18, I performed for the first time at the Clayton Heat of the Australian Poetry Slam. I got an honorable mention as like a up and coming artist, my first time performing. So,
wow, that was the very first time you'd gotten in front of a mic, in front of an audience.
Yeah, it was embarrassing, but it was
amazing.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
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 Were you nervous about doing that?
I was incredibly nervous. Some people don't know this, but so I code switch. I have an American accent when I speak to my parents and my family in Lebanon and other Americans and whatnot. And because I'd only ever heard Def Jam poetry in American spoken word, I thought this is the way it's supposed to sound. So I did my poem in an American accent, and everybody that knew me there was just like, who? What? Because no one knows that about me. So they're like, what are you doing?
Oh, that is hilarious.
So that's on the internet now.
Hip-hop is very much the bridge to poetry for a lot of young people. I mean, I know you do a bit of teaching and stuff, and I've done a bit of that too. And it's amazing how poetry can seem such a daggy word to them.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then the moment you sort of say hip hop, then their ears prick up and they go, oh, and then they lean in a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just all about the spin and contextualization.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kids, especially these days, as soon as if you tell them, oh, you know, you could be just like, the Celine Dion's and the Paul McCartney's of your time. And they're just like, who? But if I say Kendrick Lamar or Jay-Z, they're like, oh, okay, sign me up. Yeah. Whatever you're doing, teach me. Let's do it. You know, I'm ready.
I think it was last year, Paul McCartney did a duet with Kanye West. And this is so funny. It still blows my mind, actually. Twitter just lit up with all these young people saying, who the fuck is this Paul McCartney guy?
Yeah, who is this old white daggy guy that Kanye is doing a duet with?
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can totally see that. It makes no sense. It's so unfortunate. But
yeah. Well, we are getting, you know, we're getting to that time now when some people actually don't know who the Beatles are. Which seems mental, but
yeah,
I mean, it was a long time ago, right?
People don't even know who Tupac is, or like they know him by name and they know two songs, and they're like, oh, "He's my favorite rapper," you know, because it's cool to say that.
Yes,
know? But it's, you know, how many people actually know his music? How many people think
totally
that he's their favorite for a reason?
Yeah, I feel like Tupac's the equivalent of Ramones in that way, in that now their shirts are sold in Target, you know.
Bingo, yeah.
And a lot of people,
it's a gimmick,
wear them and they have no idea. It's just a fashion statement.
Yeah.
And so you got your honorable mention. Did you get a little certificate for that? Little gold star? No.
I don't think they could afford printing them. I just got like a little book as a prize. I can't remember what the book was, but I'm sure I still have it at home somewhere. I didn't read it. I'm ashamed to say. But yeah, they gave me a little book. I think a little gift voucher to a bookstore as well, like Borders or Angus Robinson or something like that.
Who was running this slam? Was this
the Australian Poetry Slam?
Oh, right.
Australian Poetry Slam.
Right, of course, yeah. Oh, yeah, because, yes, I remember.
I've never seen them do an honorable mention since, mind you. So it's usually just winner and then runner-up, and then those two go to the next round, and then from there go to the Opera House and so on and so on. But this was the only time that they, to my memory at least, have done
an honorable mention. And it's been many years since I've participated in it. They still do them in libraries. I don't know.
But yes, they do.
I do remember going to some godforsaken libraries because you'd go in one heat and you wouldn't get in. So, okay, let's go to the next one. Let's go to Geelong Warburton Library
or something. Yeah, just some ridiculous place in West Bubblefuck. Yeah.
But it was cool. It was fun times. I think slam has a very important role. It's not my bag anymore. I mean, I enjoy watching them, but I don't think I'd go in one anymore. I don't know.
I think it's a gateway drug, you know?
Right.
And I think the biggest example of that is a place like Bankstown, where the Bankstown Poetry Slam happens. An incredible initiative. It's the biggest slam in Australia.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They attract easily, you know, about 400 people per month.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's crazy. My favorite place to perform. And you see a lot of younger people getting up there, you know, as young as like 9 sometimes getting up and performing because they have other slam poetry event initiatives for like younger kids and then in schools and so on.
Yeah.
So they really try to include everybody. And because a lot of those kids are also just like me, you know, like growing up listening to hip hop or listening to Def Jam poetry and thinking that the American style of rhyming in couplets or whatever it might be is the way to do this. You get a lot of people sounding exactly the same and talking about exactly the same stuff. But it's their entry point. So if they can keep going and they can expose themselves to more poetry,
absolutely.
They start finding their... So that's the first thing you do when you start is you emulate. That's all you do. I sounded like all of my idols when I first started.
Yeah.
And I would get picked up on that a lot, you know, like, hey, you're sounding a lot like this person, stop doing that. And I try not to say that, you know, unless it's like 3-4 years in, then I'm like, all right, it's been enough time. It's time to start, stop doing that. But like the first year or two, man, emulate all you want, you know, sound exactly like who you want to.
Absolutely. Everything comes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn.
Yeah.
And I'm all for anything that brings poetry to a larger audience.
Totally.
You know, I think that's fantastic.
Sure.
Although slam poetry has become such a sort of buzzword now, I guess, that many times when I tell people that I'm a poet and I perform my work, they go, oh, yeah, so you're a slam poet.
Yeah.
They just can't – a lot of people who maybe don't know that much about it can't even – they assume that if you perform your work to an audience, you must be a slam poet.
It's a trigger word, man.
Yeah.
I know some people who are vehemently against – the concept of slam poetry.
Yeah.
I'm indifferent about it. I'm indifferent about most things. I'm just kind of like, look, I don't believe that slam poetry is a genre. I think it is – slam poetry is any poem that you do at a slam.
Absolutely.
You could read a haiku at a slam. It's a haiku, not a slam poem. It's a haiku that you've performed at a slam.
Yes.
So that doesn't make it a slam poem. It's still a haiku. You've just performed it in the setting of a slam.
Absolutely.
And it's judged.
But I guess the problem, not a problem, but one of the flaws of slam, I guess, and this is what some people would have a little axe to grind with, is that it's a certain type of poem that often wins those. And so therefore you find people sort of pandering towards that formula.
Absolutely.
And then that's when it all becomes a very, very same-ish.
Totally. Yeah. It's just this, and I have an axe to grind with that as well. I think it's a double-edged sword. Like I can't argue one side without also arguing the other side. I don't like the fact that it's always the fact that you make something judged immediately means that people are going to want to perform for the audience as opposed to for themselves. And if they reach the audience, then so be it, which is the way that an unjudged performance usually would be.
I've written
this poem for myself, and if it reaches you, then I'm happy. If it doesn't, fuck you.
Mm.
Whereas for a slam, I want to win. There's prize money. There's something. There's stakes. And so I'm going to do a poem about white privilege, or about, you know, slavery, or about the indigenous.
Oh, absolutely. Indigenous, yeah. I was just about to say it's very heavily biased towards social justice kind of poems.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
that's a good thing on the one hand. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that stuff is being put out there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've seen some poems that have been dog shit, you know, scored very highly.
Yeah.
Because of the content. Like, oh, I hate rape. That must be a great poem.
Yeah.
But there's still got to be a craft to what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just need to differentiate. Like, what is a poem and what is a rant?
Yeah.
Because there is a difference. If anything is poetry, then you and I having this conversation and podcast right now is poetry.
Yeah, and it is.
And it isn't. Well, clearly a lot of more. And you know what? I digress. But, you know, typically I would say, you know, if you're going to call yourself a poet, it's the same as calling yourself a musician. You have to make music. And if you want to be a good musician, you have to make good music, and if you want to be a great musician, and so on and so on. So if you want to be a poet, you have to write a poem. There has to be work involved. There has to be technique and
absolutely
skill.
Absolutely. And I mean, and this doesn't go just for slam, actually. It is interesting how people who have really great stage presence and delivery can sometimes really win an audience, even though maybe on page that poem wouldn't look that great.
Yes.
But on the other side of the coin, some people's writing who was really fantastic can get on stage and just massacre their own work because they don't know how to deliver it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And both are deserved, I have to say. Like, I'm of the mind that both are deserved. If you have a mediocre poem, especially if you're still growing in the art form and you haven't found your writing yet, but you have a great stage presence, then you're in the right lane. You're not doing page poetry, you're doing slam, like, or you're performing, you're doing performance poetry. And I mean, look, I love page poets as much as the next guy, but I'm not afraid to say it's very difficult to listen to sometimes if they're on stage, because paper in front of your face, tripping over words sometimes, umming and ahhing, really monotonous or like lower inflections at the end. If you want to be on stage, I am of the mind that you need to then craft yourself as a performance poet because you are performing. The example that I give is if you are a newspaper journalist and you are asked to come and speak at an event, you are not reading your latest article.
Mm.
You are crafting a speech that is meant to be spoken.
Exactly.
If they can do that, then you as a poet can put stuff on the page. But if you're going to be coming to a performance, craft a poem that is meant to be performed. And if you can't do that, then stay in your lane and have the performer stay
respect
in their lane.
Respect the art. Respect the art. Yeah. But I would like to unequivocally state that I am pro-slam. I think it's a fantastic thing in that it does generate a wider audience for poetry. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily my bag anymore. That's what I can't understand is people who aren't into it, but then say that it shouldn't exist. Like,
that's too much. Nothing should not exist. Like, besides anything dangerous, nothing should not exist.
I don't see how it can be detrimental to poetry, put it that way. Like, just like, if it's not your bag, it's not your bag. It doesn't mean, you know, it should be banned.
Yeah. Do the work and make whatever you do like bigger.
Yeah.
You know, if slam is so big, but you like alternative, whatever, you know, some other genre of poetry, then do the work, put on an event and market it so that people come, make it big. Same way that people made Slam big, you know, it's possible.
What did you first enjoy about being on stage? Or when did you first start enjoying it? Because it's kind of pretty scary at first. It's hard to enjoy.
Definitely is. Good question. I've never answered that before. I've never even thought about that before. So growing up, I had a stutter, a very, very bad one. I had a titter, which is like, and then I also had a block, which is where you just block out completely. So I can't even finish the sentence. I have to stop, take a deep breath, breathe it out, and then start again. And if I try to continue the sentence, I will, like, you'll see veins popping out of my head and neck because I'm just trying to force the rest of the sentence. Saw speech therapists and whatnot. And I kind of took matters into my own hands and joined the debating club at school and just threw myself into it. And I was just like, I'm
man,
sick of
respect. That's really throwing yourself in the deep end
and it led to a lot of embarrassment and you know, people on the other team, my own team, laughing while, you know, like giggling while I'm, you know, doing my speech and stuttering through it, and parents in the audience laughing. And you know, it was like an ordeal by fire. I really had to, like, I needed to get burnt and kind of come out the other end, and it worked. So after school and after doing debating, As great as arguing is, I didn't want to make a career out of that. So I kind of looked for the next thing. And for me, that was spoken word. So I started doing that.
But really, your stutter after just doing a few of the, a term of these debating class or something, it just sort of faded away. Is that?
Definitely wasn't a term. It was like, I think I did debating for about 3 or 4 years.
Okay, right.
And it was like, even into the fourth year, like even into my last year debating, it was still there-ish. It's still there now. Like if I speak Arabic, because I'm comfortable, but not as comfortable as I am in English, I'll still stutter because I've got so much what I want to say that I'm thinking of in English, and I have to go through the process of translating it, making it appropriate, contextualizing in Arabic, and then having it come out the funnel and still sounding funny if it's a joke, or still sounding sad if it's or political if it's this, or that work leads to some crazy stuttering sometimes.
I can imagine. I've got a crazy visual of this, like all this stuff coming down the pipe and it's sort of getting log jammed, you know, flowing down, you know.
Yeah, the speech therapist when I was a kid was like, he's got all these ideas and they're all coming out of this tiny little funnel. Like they're just getting log jammed in there. And so he can't use the breathe and order them and create it, like make one pipeline as opposed to a funnel system. So to answer your question, I liked getting over that on stage. I loved nailing it. So if I did nail it and I didn't forget a single word, I didn't stutter, and it was powerful, and I reached people, and they came up to me afterwards and told me that they enjoyed it. It was less about their validation and more about, I don't particularly care if people like what I do or not. For me, it was more like, I did that. I got it. I didn't stutter. It was a whole thing. I didn't stutter once, you know. And now that I stutter a lot less and I'm not stuttering anymore, it's evolving as far as what I'm looking for in the end product of a performance. It's more so about, cool, I can perform this the same way that any other slam poet would, or, you know, the way that it typically is done. How can I do this differently? You know, can I do this quietly without yelling? Can I whisper it? Can I this? Can I that? And it's just, if it works while I'm doing something different, then it's that same pleasure, that same joy that I had when I would nail a performance without stuttering. So.
And you strike me as someone who's quite empathic. So I think that you would know and get a buzz of the enjoyment of the audience too. My enjoyment's not the right word. That feeling when you know you're making a connection.
Yeah.
I always felt like it was a kind of, and this was one of the, maybe the biggest reason I liked performing, was when that you feel that connection and it starts to sort of flow like a river between you and the audience, and you're like, yeah, something's going on here, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the question? I love that feeling. And it's also been a challenge as an artist to manage that and to, first of all, ascertain when it's happened, because sometimes it's more difficult than others. If you have, especially if I'm at a school and a lot of the people there don't want to be there. Finding that crossover and seeing when the students are actually paying attention all of a sudden is difficult because they're not a poetry audience where they're like, oh, we're not afraid to click and clap and get rowdy and love it. And they're just like, all right, so I like this, but how do I express that? Seeing that in their eyes is very difficult. And noticing it is important because if you don't and you keep going the way that you were before, you've lost them.
Yes.
And the workshop is shit after that and everything is shit and you never get invited back. So it literally affects your bottom line.
For our listeners, give some context to this. So you do workshops,
yes.
Poetry workshops, yes. in schools.
Yes.
Is this on a regular basis?
I mean, it's poetry. So, you know, how consistent is anything artistic, really? It's more consistent than it is for others, which I'm very blessed to say. And I'm thankful for that. But obviously, it's not as consistent as I'd love it to be.
So I used to do a little bit of that too. I haven't done it for quite some time. But when I first started doing it, I found it quite difficult. And I realized after a little while is because I was walking into these classes and thinking of it as doing a performance.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to like me.
Yeah.
But then one day I suddenly realized they don't have to like me. But I can still be making an impact,
yeah.
and still be doing my job. It's actually irrelevant whether they think you're a cool poet or not. That's not what you're there for.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was really just about, like, I think if you walk in, yeah, it's like you said, if you're walking in with that super high expectation of yourself, you're about to fail.
Absolutely.
I kind of just walked in saying, all right, I want to reach at least one student. If I can do that, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Because you think about how many classes I do. If I collect each of those one students, it culminates into quite a few people. You know,
yeah.
I'm the only student in my entire school in its history up until now that has done, one of two that has done any spoken word. Nora being the other one who you also know. Nora,
ah, yes, yeah. yes.
But so two out of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So for me to expect going into another school and wanting all 1,000, however many kids there are in that school or class to be like me, like, it's just not going to happen.
That's true. Yeah. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very, very clear when I walk into the classroom. I'm like, look, I understand 100%. You know, like, let's not lie to each other. I know that a lot of you guys are not going to like this class. I know a lot of you guys are just going to cheese through it and wait for it to end. I know that a lot of you will not end up pursuing successful careers in spoken word, but this is about creativity. It's not about poetry. It's about being creative. It's about looking for an avenue to be creative. So for this next hour and a half, however long the period is, I want you to just try.
Mm.
Just for this little period. After that, I leave the poems that you wrote, the things that you scrunch them up, throw them in the bin, burn them, you know, do a rain dance around. I don't care what you do. Get rid of them. I don't care. But for this little period of time, try. And it means that they may never write a poem again, but the next time that they write a story, they might appreciate, or they might approach that story differently. The next time that they write a resume, they might approach it differently. The next time that they do a presentation to their bosses, they might approach it differently.
Yeah.
That's an impact, and it's lasting.
Do you perform your work in these situations?
It depends on how much time I have, but usually, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to establish credibility, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, I've done that a few times, and sometimes not even like as a – sometimes I know a few people who are teachers, so they'll bring me in as a guest to give them, you know, an example of the spoken word. But it's so fucking awkward sometimes when you do a poem, right? And then at the end of it, it's just like nothing and they're just staring at you. Maybe someone coughs.
It's crickets. It's crickets. Yeah, it happens, man.
Like, okay.
Guess I'll teach you how to do that loveless performance you just saw. Yeah.
You have to have a thick skin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Especially with kids. Kids are ruthless. And I appreciate that because they're performing in the poetry scene, and it's why I perform a lot less in it, is it's so supportive. It's so, like, loving to the nth degree, to a fault. You know, it doesn't matter how bad you are going to be told that was the best thing you've ever done.
That's so true.
Kids, not like that. Kids are just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And that means I have to now go back home and ensure that I can rewrite that piece so that the poetry scene people like it and the kids like it.
Yeah.
And I reach the whole spectrum. And if I can do that, then I've written something that's poignant, profound, beautiful, artistic, and accessible.
Yeah.
And that's important. It's just as important. I think a lot of poets miss that.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like if your demographic is just poetry scene people, by all means, but don't expect to be as successful when you eventually do teach a workshop, because those kids might hate it.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. They've got enough to lose. They are very honest. Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Not that all poetry has to be blatantly understood.
Mm.
Doing air quotes right there. You know, as I would tell some of my students, sometimes if it's just generating a feeling, then it's succeeding. You don't have to literally be able to decipher every line.
Yeah.
I have to anyway. Yeah. But if it's totally lost on them, then maybe it's not succeeding what it's supposed to be.
You're right. Yeah. Doing. And you say it better than I did. Yeah. I think for me, it's more so talking about, like, there are some people, for example, who choose to do like absurdist poetry, which is great. Like, it's so fun to see on stage, but that might be lost on students at a school purely because, I mean, you think about what these kids go through every single day. They are told what to do on a daily basis, all the way through school, and then when they get home by their parents as well. So creativity is not something that's typically encouraged. Even when they are told to write a story, they're given the parameters for the story and how to write it, and this is the beginning, middle, and end. They're not really told, like, when's the last time you saw a kid do an absurdist, a story for English? No, this is the beginning. This is how you introduce. There are three paragraphs for the body. You can't tell them to, hey, fuck all that, forget it all, and do what you want to do. They never get to do that.
Yeah.
So to do an absurdist poem, as much as it might be necessary for them, it may not convey because they haven't reached that level of creativity yet. They haven't been exposed to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. Speaking of poetry, would you like to maybe read us one?
Absolutely.
Or perform us
yeah,
one?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Take it away at your leisure.
My generation echoed over eons. Before gold coins and hydroponics, we are hot sun and riverbeds made roads because it doesn't rain anymore. We are the offspring of a yell in the dark made by brown-skinned warriors standing atop valley peaks. The vista before them is nothing more than a wall to bounce their frustrations off. So when they shook their aggressors out of their unruly hair, they stood in attack positions, before them a mountain, the most immovable of foes, and yelled, "Nahnu Arab," loud, like hammers in the wind, until the ridge rumbled and the cliff crumbled, until the peak came tumbling down. I was conceived in the rubble. I live in the valleys they dug with their war cries. I am a product of their frustrations. I planted zaytun in my cheeks, so I wouldn't forget the taste of home when my beard grew. I spoke occupied tongue long before I learned to speak invader. My ancestors yelled their warnings into my eardrums so I wouldn't flinch when the bombs dropped. So this is for balconies in Trablus. It's for rooftops in Gaza. Abandoned Halabi coffee shops. Baghdadi Market, City Squares, Bilqahira. This is for freedom painted blood red on our horizons. I can't unstitch our pasts or coagulate the present. I can only live where the wound used to be. This is for scarred flesh touched by sun and struggle, who resisted with spark-strewn memories and open minds because someone had to fight for the diaspora when the diaspora stopped fighting for themselves. Children's bellies full of more battle anthems than breakfast. Walk across desert and leave behind more war drum than immigrant footprints. I can't unstitch our past or coagulate the present. But I can perform my recompense until my youngest child hears it, hoping she does the same for hers. These stages are the tops of my world, and I cry retribution into microphones, hoping to echo forth a millennium of generations, men, women, and children that are even half the scholars, half the scientists, half the warriors my forefathers once were. With a textbook in one hand and a sword in the other, armed to the teeth with a pen mightier than the blade they carry, I am yelling in every poem, trying to bounce my frustrations into an echo of a generation that writes about me. Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, oh, man.
That was some powerful shit.
It's so weird when there's two people in the audience.
Have you ever done a performance in a bar?
Not to two people. I think I don't even know how big the smallest audience I've ever had was, maybe six people.
Yeah.
But they were a really excited six people, so I'm cool with that.
Right.
There were
six
that sounded like 60.
Yeah.
That's fine cool. by me.
Can you, if you're prepared to, can you give me some breakdown on that poem, actually? Because there's a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
I love the phrase, coagulate the present.
Everyone loves that word.
Maybe it's a beautiful everyone, word, isn't it?
It's like the word that everyone picks up. And it was like my favorite word in the poem as well.
Yeah, right. It's interesting.
And a few favorite moments in that piece. So break it down, I guess. My ex and I sat down over Skype one time and decided to do a little poetry workshop. She's a poet as well. And we were just like, let's pick a word and just write what comes to mind on that word. And the word was echo. And so I thought about what an echo is and what I wanted it to be. And I thought about an echo that kind of travels forward across the earth and then comes back around behind you.
Wow.
And like, what if that is ancestry? And so I wrote that piece based on that. And mind you, that was a time, I mean, it's always happening, but like it was a time when I was really heavily considering what my ancestry was and who I was and who I am as a result of them. And just trying to feel proud of who I am and the people that made me. Because it's very easy to look at the Middle East now and kind of wonder what the fuck happened. Like, we used to be one of the greatest people in the world, and, you know, technological advancements and literature and poetry and science and technology and everything came out of there. And now look.
So much conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was about trying to figure out how I can incorporate that past and make it a part of my present. And then also project it forward so that, like I said at the end, you know, my offspring, the future ancestry can write about me. You know, their answer, I can be, and I'm going to be an ancestor one day. And I hope that I'm worthy as one, you know.
Ah, I love that. Yeah. I love that. So were you born in Lebanon?
Yeah.
I'm very ignorant about the geography of That's Lebanon, right. but.
Where is it?
No, where in Lebanon were you?
In Tripoli.
I have heard of Tripoli.
Yes, it's the second major city.
Yes.
There's Beirut in the south and then Tripoli in the north.
Yeah. And what age did you leave? Like, what sort of memories do you have? Right,
I was very, very young. Yeah. I was raised here. But we'd go back and forth, and obviously my accent changes. So I'm still very connected to that place, whether it be connected because I hate it, I never want to go back, or connected. Right now, there's an incredible revolution happening in Lebanon that's 14 or 15 days in, maybe. That is just really, really uplifting, and I've never been more proud to kind of be Lebanese. So amazing. I'm always connected in some way.
Yeah. What age were you when you first went back? Because that must have been quite an experience.
I think I was 9.
Right.
I think I was 9. Maybe I was a little bit.
All right. So you're younger. Still quite young then when you went back.
Yeah. We had to kind of wait until my brother was able to travel. I didn't get it. Like, I was there. Everyone spoke Arabic, which is different-ish. They didn't really understand. My accent was still mostly Aussie and they didn't really get it. Which is why I kind of started to have that American accent on the side.
Right. This is fascinating, actually. Yeah.
It's very common, actually. I thought it was just me, and then I realized there's a lot of people in different diasporas that do it as well. I felt like I was just at an uncle's house, but with lots of uncles and aunties. You know, just in a different place. That was it. Because that was all we were doing. We were just hopping around from someone's house to someone else's house and occasionally going outside. You know, that was it. But it wasn't until actually the last couple of visits where I got to see it got to see it more holistically.
Yes.
You know, got to see the poverty.
Yeah.
in others and in my own family, and then to see the way that the politics works and how circular it is and how vicious cycly it is, how difficult it is to come out of. And so, yeah, it was nothing more than cool to go when I was a kid. Now it's a powerful experience. Now it's yes. like, it's empowering.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another layer to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You spoke before about writing to the prompt of Echo, which I think is a great segue to talking about Dirty 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. So break it down for our listeners who know nothing about it.
Yeah. I need to work on my elevator pitch because it's still quite long. So bear with me.
We've got time.
Dear listeners. I just don't want to lose people halfway through it, you know, like halfway through explanation, like, you know, the explanation, they're like, I lost interest, don't care. So bear with me. So every April is International Poetry Month. It was originally just in the US, National Poetry Writing Month, and then it became a kind of just it's impossible in the age of social media for it to not travel. So it became International Poetry Writing Month. And so creatives, poets, novelists, short storyers would try to write one piece of creative writing every day for the month of April. And because it's so rapid fire, it's very, very difficult to edit. And so they end up very raw and dirty. Hence the Dirty 30. You had like this dirty group of 30 poems or pieces by the end of the month. Typically, this was done either individually or in small writing groups. And a friend of mine exhibited that. She invited me to a very small group of writers. I think it was like maybe 12 of us or less. And she would give she'd give a prompt once every God knows how long. Like it could be a week, once every few days, whenever she felt like it and had the time. She'd offer a little, very, very like simple prompt. Could just be an image, for example, just write. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I nailed every single day and, you know, kind of I was really on top of it. And then the next year she wasn't able to keep up with it. She like moved into a different space and, you know, it happens. But I wasn't done. I was like, no, but I want this. I like it. I want to do it again. So I set up my own page. I asked her, I'm like, is this cool? Is it okay if I kind of set up my? She's like, yeah, totally. So I set up the Dirty 30 on Facebook and it started off with, I think I invited like 100 people, of them maybe 50 or 40 actually showed up. And they were mainly just people that I knew in the Melbourne poetry writing scene and some from the New Zealand scene. And fast forward to however many years later it's been, I've lost count.
Approximately how long ago did you start?
I think it was about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Like six.
Yeah.
And now we're at 2,500 people and growing. And yeah, they're from all over the world. We've got Indians, we've got Americans, we've got people from the Arab Emirates, we've got New Zealanders, Australians. It's just a crazy mashup of people that we want to write. And the reason I wanted to kind of do this was I wanted to offer a space where people could write together, like a large communal writing group. You could also then be inspired by more, as opposed to just the three people that you're writing with. You had 300 people to be inspired by. And you got to critique and be critiqued, criticize and be criticized, leave feedback and have feedback given to you. Be empowered and also empower others. It was really beautiful just watching friendships form, and I think one or two relationships formed as a result of it. It's just so crazy. I'm still waiting for the day that a marriage happens as a result of the Dirty 30. It's going to be like a claim to fame.
That would be amazing.
If you're listening, get to it.
And I know a celebrant too if you're listening.
There you go. Yeah. Shameless plug. So yeah, and so the catch is you join the group every day. I post a prompt, and sometimes they're super simple ones, sometimes they're quite complex and finicky.
Every day or just every day in April?
Every single day of April.
Yes. Right.
Except Friday. Friday is Free Write Friday. You get to write whatever you want.
Yep.
But every single day there is a prompt. Like I said, some of them are very simple, some of them are quite finicky. And sometimes I'll add like a little kicker, you know, if you want to really try your hand at this, try doing this as well. Just to kind of push people to write out of their, this is my way of overcoming the typical slam poetry, typical all-page poetry, typical, like anything typical. Break all that down, write something different to what you're used to. And by the end of the day, at a certain time, I cut it off and I read every single poem that has been posted up until that point, which I think at most at any one point was about 800 poems. And then shortlist and pick my favorite. And that favorite goes into, if I have the time to print it and put it together, the Dirty 30 anthology.
Yes.
I want to see it on the camera.
Is holding in front of me now. Looks beautiful. So this is volume two.
This is volume two. Yeah. We had volume one. I wish it was volume six and I was able to do it every single year. But the last one was, I think, 4 years ago. We put it together. And
that's quite a lot of work.
Sorry. Oh, it's.
Yeah.
As an understatement. You so would much know. Work. I was doing it all by myself.
So hang on, can I just wind this back?
You sure can.
A bit. So you pick a favorite from each day.
Yes.
And that favorite, well, as has happened twice, will go, they'll all go into the anthology.
Indeed. Yeah. So you have 30 poems, including, and then one of my own, so 31 in total.
Yeah. The years you haven't printed an anthology, do you just, do you just put them in a place online or something, the favorites, or do you not really do that?
So the favorites I put in here because I want people to buy it. If I was to just print it kind of in a doc or whatever, then people would have no reason to purchase the book.
Sure.
But the prompts are online, so people can look at previous year's prompts and stay up to date.
How do you come up with the prompts?
Just anything from deep thoughts to something that occurs to me randomly.
Sure. Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. I'm surprised. It's made me more creative. Even like there's writing to the prompts, but even just thinking of the prompts can be, you know, somewhat creative. I don't know. Do you want some examples? Let's get some examples.
Yeah, that's great.
You're in a class or seminar. This is day six. You're in a class or seminar. It's boring you to tears. While you sit there doodling in your notebook and beatboxing in your mind, you dream up something terrible to do that'll make this ordeal far more eventful without anyone knowing it was you. What have you dreamed up? How did you execute it? How did you do so unnoticed?
Wow. That is quite an involved prompt. Yep. Amazing.
And the answer to it was phenomenal. Yep. But you will only find out if you buy the book.
It must be so fascinating to you. It must even feel a little bit godlike, dare I say it.
Oh, jeez.
With you are.
Say that to the practicing Muslim. Yeah, see how that goes. Mom, I'm sorry.
With you are dangling this little prompt in front of your subjects Puppet and master. Then just seeing what happens. Yep. It must be fascinating.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Definitely an the reason I like this is because it's very difficult to have an ego as a result of it, because a lot of the poems that are coming up are far better than anything that you could write. So it's impossible to kind of be like, yeah, I made this, I started it, I'm the reason that, you know, and it's more than anything, it's just a blessing. Like just going to shows here in Melbourne and around Australia and even around the world and hearing people say, this is a Dirty 30 poem.
Just yeah.
Like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, Abdul's in the house right now. I'd be like, don't, this is you, man. Like you wrote this poem. I only gave you the prompt. Like you could have written a poem like this anyway, you know?
Yeah. So but nonetheless, it is a good feeling knowing that you've helped to
I hope so.
To incubate that stuff. It's amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You have. Absolutely. All this work would not have existed if you weren't doing this thing. And that's amazing. And you should be proud of that. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man. That's one thing. Thanks, Dad. Shout out to my parents who never told me that. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you could have done worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, son, can we have another poem from you, please?
You sure can, Dad. All right, I'm going to do this one. Oh, boo-boo. Are you okay? Been thinking about downing that little bottle of pills on your bedside table. You told your friends about that, didn't you? What did they say? Get help? What, like a therapist? Why? I mean, we've been doing just fine handling it together. All right, look. Here's an ambiguously written poem about suicide with a vague ending. Make sure you read the whole thing, okay? Well. Did I go through with it or didn't I? Huh? Should you do it or shouldn't you? Who knows? Who cares? It's provocative. See? There. therapy done. God, I'm tired. Can we lay down for a bit? The past is rushing back to me and, well, naps over confrontation. Am I right? Am I right? Wait. Is that a book? Give it here. What's in this? Facts? Statistics? Science? Dude, we talked about this. We don't do books, blogs, remember? That's where the truth is. Pure, unadulterated, unfiltered, unchecked opinion. I'm telling you, I could spend like a whole 20 minutes skimming through these for thoughts I agree with. Look, don't get me wrong. I used to read books. But then remember when we checked Instagram and saw that she had moved on? And of course, I spent the next 2.5 years trying to figure out why I wasn't good enough, but I don't do that anymore. Why? Because At Lucy Loves Love told me to bury my past and shallowly invest in a rebound. And look at me now. Everyone who follows me knows I'm like the happiest. Now, does Johan Hari give that same advice? Does Alain de Botton? Seriously, do they? I've never actually read the books. What? You think I built 25,000 followers from nothing thanks to longitudinal evidence? At Lucy Loves Love has 3 million followers. Never shed a fact in her life. Tell me, how many followers do Freud or Piaget have? Exactly. They're dead. Point proven. Seriously, though, you're taking all this advice from the wrong people and it's hurting you. Your friends were like, stop sulking and share what's on your mind. And I get it. They mean well, but sharing feelings? Why? To what end? What gives them the right to call you out on your bullshit? Suck it up and take a selfie. Or share an inspirational quote that's totally actually a jab at them. Yeah, I'm great at quotes. Don't let anything but the sun steal your shine. Nailed it. Okay, now just insert sunset background, crank up that saturation, hashtag vitamin D's nuts, and upload. There. They won't bother you anymore. No one will. It's just you and me. Actually, with a subconscious like me, it's technically just you. Alone. I know it's hard, but it's only been 4 years, so you're going to have to hang in there. Just one more year and we can rebrand you as the brooding lone wolf. People love that. Soon, you won't have to be lonely anymore. You'll have millions hanging off your every tear and applauding it. We both know that's the only kind of love that matters.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Was that written to a prompt, just out of curiosity?
No.
Yeah.
Just thought about something that was really pissing me off and wrote a poem.
It's good fuel, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
What I loved about that too is that it was completely different in tone to the other poem you did. And I'm guessing maybe working the prompts a lot and seeing a lot of that work would influence, like, well, I mean, you've been talking about before about not wanting to do one sort of particular type of poetry.
Yeah. It was a fun piece to write because that topic, it's so easy to write something deep and profound about it and kind of it's also very easy to tell people what to do. We should not be doing this and you shouldn't do this and we should be more like, and that's, I feel like that's most of the poetry that I've heard on that kind of topic. And I thought for once, let's go the other way. Let's double down.
Yes.
Let me be the guy that actually really, really enjoys the validation of social media and the love for people's likes and wanting to build a presence and market my depression as opposed to, you know, overcoming it or something like that, you know, something terrible like that. And in doing that, address or comment on how terrible I think that is. So it's a different thing. I was like, this is different. It's going to be hard. I like hard. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's right. That's challenge yourself.
Yeah.
And just speaking flipping back to Dirty 30, yep. Where can people get their grubby little mitts on that thing?
Myself? Great. They can definitely hit me up on Facebook. Yeah. Come over, have a chat, Instagram, whatever it is.
Come over and... Don't say that.
Huh? No, yeah, probably shouldn't actually. Especially after that last poem. scratch that. No, definitely say hi. I love talking to new people.
Yeah.
And you can buy a book directly from me. Alternatively, you can find the book on Amazon, the Book Depository, and a few other places. I mean, if you Google it, you'll be able to find. Yeah.
Well, I'll drop some links to that
in
the show notes.
Yes.
Okay, so now we're going to do Wheelin' and Stealin'. This is a segment of the show where I read a piece of somebody else's work.
Nice.
I'm going to read something from Solid Air. Solid Air is a collection of Australian and New Zealand spoken word put into print, mm-hmm. which has just recently been... launched. They had a soft launch in Melbourne at the Wheeler Centre.
Mm.
David Savinger, one of the editors, so he was saying he'd like to do something a little bit more theatrical, come back to Melbourne and do something a bit more theatrical as well.
Mm. I was going to say, if we talked about myself also doing a poem of somebody else's, and since I'm not the type to do that, you can, if you like, take my spot and read one of the pieces from the Dirty 30, if you like.
I would love to do that.
There you go.
I will do both.
Both. Awesome.
Fantastic. Cool.
You do that, and I'm going to also look for a really good piece.
I'm going to read a poem by Kelly Lee Hickey, and it's called How to Stay Afloat.
Hmm.
It goes like this. You take some small part of yourself, fashion it into a paper boat. Be careful of the delicate folds, ensure it is watertight. Just below the bow, blow your wish. Carry it gently. Under no circumstances should you try to put it into your pocket. In your hands is the only safe place. Keep your palms open at all times. When you come to the water, do not jump in. This is why you built a vessel. You are a land-dwelling mammal, all hot blood and need for oxygen. The wind licking sails is not the same as breathing. Get down low. Not in prayer, but for practicality. You want to see this close up. Test the wind with your saliva streaked across one finger. It's not fail-proof. Every assumption is based in some part on a lie. Now gather your breath. You're bellowing mammalian weakness. Poise the boat against the water, the boat against your lips. Draw back the wind like an arrow, hold it like grudge. Take this small fragment of yourself floating, let it go, and don't look back. Thank you, Kelly Lee Hickey, for writing that particular poem, which is on page 96 of Solid Air.
Thank you for the word mammalian. That mammalian. Completely Sean off.
It sure did.
That was fun to watch.
That was like a spoke in the wheels of my bike.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like a stick in the spokes of my bike.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, just stopped you.
Yeah. Yeah, Solid Air is available in bookshops and online. It's... I'm losing the plot.
You want to talk about it, man? You're all right.
UQP. UQP.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Now, you've got a poem for me to read from Dirty 30.
Hopefully not too many words that will trip you up.
No words more than six letters long.
There's a poem by Iman Aitri from Sydney. She's an incredible writer. And you can read the prompt if you like, or just go straight into the poem. It's up to you. What do you think?
I'll read the prompt.
Yeah.
Is it just this bit here?
Yeah, that's the poem. Yeah.
Right. Great. So the prompt is an opportunity for participants to write whatever they like once a week. Mama, the longing has made a home out of me. The furniture doesn't look the same and the bookshelves have all been rearranged. The walls are a shade of nothing matters anyway. And I am a home well lived in. Mama, the longing has made a home out of me.
The windows don't open all the way, and the light doesn't dance, it doesn't sway, and even the trees are turning grey, and I am a home well lived in.
Mm.
Beautiful.
Get goosebumps when I hear that poem. Yeah, I think that was for Free Write Friday, hence the prompt being so basic.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right, Free Write. Yeah, of course, yeah. As you mentioned before, Free Write Friday, yes.
Yeah.
That was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to really diving into this book.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow, love it. Love it.
So good.
Let's squeeze one more poem out of your brain.
Ooh, okay.
Are you up for that?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just throwing challenges at you from left, right, and center.
You really are. You don't pull punches here, do you?
No, I do not.
All right.
I'm here to build your character.
You are. This one's too long. I'm not going to do that. I think I'm going to do one of my favorite pieces. But since I typically stumble on one pit and I don't want to do that on this podcast, I'm going to read it just to be safe. We were boys once. Embryonic rebels, we were conceived with clenched fists, then we came out swinging. Always fighting. We would spar with hunger while our mothers assaulted an empty fridge and our fathers went to war from 9 to 5 in search of after-battle bounty. This was our daily family feud. So on playground courts, we dribbled dreams and leapt high enough to feel like we were wearing sneakers we couldn't afford, then we'd scuff joints on imperfect touchdowns. We had skyscraped knees. And we lived for the chilly, humid days because the fog meant we'd be toying with real-life clouds and our layups. Then we'd hold rim till our palms bled, praying we could stay up because up here, our third-world problems precipitated and the screams of divorcing parents were just pretty lightning shows beneath us. While we cared little for the likes of Shakespeare and Orwell because most of us couldn't read good or well, we comprehended the grammatical errors and the worry-line calligraphy on our mothers' faces. See, we hated novels, but we read open books cover to cover. We were the shriveled roots of an oaken generation raised by fathers that came home too late to see us and mothers that yelled too loud to listen. We were beaten, punched, and kickboxed into our own category, then taped up with one air hole too little to catch oxygen or sunlight. We were fed insults and knuckle sandwiches, fertilized with blood and bone. We were forced to grow up. Strain hard enough to find flaws, and eventually, that's all you start to see. Unsure of whether we were gifts or curses. After all, satin red ribbons and blood look the same. We strain hard to find ourselves in the mirror, but we saw nothing but mistakes. So we resorted to watching raindrops compete to the bottom of windows, waiting for life to Peter Pan out. We were lost boys. But we became men long before you did. We were addicts that lived horrors and shot up, only to realize that the needle in our vein funneled memories that painted blueprints through bloody tubes. Every door pane knocked on, every room it filled, and every fireplace it threw liquor in sketched its way across a biological network we wished we never toyed with. Arteries burst, neurons fired through chambers, canals flooded, pipes cave cutters leaked, and it took total destruction to help us realize we weren't faulty aqueducts, we weren't rundown undergrounds, we were cities. Peppered with columns, pillars, observation decks, temples and domes, we aren't ruins, we are modern art. Inhabited by spirited civilians who rejected democracy and employed dictatorship. In other words, we aren't voting for your respect anymore. We're just taking it. We are no longer boys. Wearing our biological genes, we dress like thugs but speak like fathers, caressing pencils and pens till they grace our pages stamped with teardrop watermarks. We are men now. Conceived with clenched fists, we came out swinging, and we never stopped fighting for the cities we built within us and the nations to come.
Yes.
Boom.
Woo!
Boom shakalaka.
What was that poem called again?
Lost Boys.
Love it. We are cities. Love that city within, you know? Oh.
Complexity.
That hit me. That hit me in the soft spot.
I'm glad.
Okay, now it's time. I don't think we have a sound. We need a sound effect for this part.
You really do.
Now is the time that we're going to read some poems inspired by our listeners, by their prompts.
Woo!
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hang on just a sec. I just got to find
I'm gonna read the some of them out. Now, as Abdulmai mentioned before, So I was a bit slack.
Yeah.
You were. I've been a bit busy this week.
A little bit.
And I did only put the call out yesterday for the prompts. And
also
then,
slack.
And then I thought, and I got lots of good ones, right? And then this morning I suddenly realized, oh shit, I haven't sent it to Abdul yet. So I sent it to you.
Yeah.
I sent it at 11. I think you saw it at 11:30. And
like
you were here at 12:30. So full respect that you've actually managed to write anything at all.
And you know what else? I nailed all of them. Come at me, son.
Wait, what? You've used every single
prompt.
What?
You don't even know me.
What?
Oh, I do anything I want.
Lord.
I'm the best.
I am actually, I'm peeling myself off the floor. I am actually flabbergasted. This is astounding news. Wow. Full respect, Matt. You are King fucking Kong right now.
Steps. And you do the Rocky thing. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Wow.
Furiously riding on the train.
Wow. Okay. How do you want to play this? Do you want me to read out the prompts first, or do you want to read the piece first?
Prompts, man. Let's do prompts.
Okay, right.
Let's do prompts so people can kind of like, you know what
some,
to listen
get
for.
Get some context to it. Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Just blowing my mind.
Blew my own, man. I'm so happy
wow,
right now.
Respect.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right, I'm going to read out the prompt. So one of them is pinball.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I haven't written a poem about pinball yet. I haven't. I still haven't, but I will.
Interesting.
Pac-Man ghosts on Halloween. I'm going to truncate some of these. Candy. What's really inside your cowboy hat?
That's a question for you, I think. Yeah.
From Benny Zola.
Yeah.
Yep, that's definitely a question for me. Who knows what's inside it? Not much, I suspect. being stuck in the TV. Having a tick bite your ear. A lot of these are from Liz Jelly.
Shout out to Liz Jelly, man. I want to know how her mind works. Some of these are really depressing and some of these are out there. I got to say, man.
Oh, that is very funny and on point.
Yes.
That feeling when your dog walks away from you, that's a sad feeling.
Yes.
A huge crushing void in your life that you can't fill no matter how hard you try.
See? Liz, man. Get your shit together. Love you, Liz.
So do I. So do I. Love you, Liz Jelly. Maybe you just can't handle this, Jelly. only being able to achieve things when you're crippingly busy. how old people have got gold teeth and been fixated by it as a child. I'm losing my shit here.
Yeah.
How do good people die instead of those you wish would not.
See that?
Would. Hang on, I'm gonna say that again.
Yep.
How do good people die instead of those who you wish would just let go? That's
up here, and then she just took us back down.
Yeah,
here.
Right.
Yeah.
Wondering if people realize that I run my dog's Instagram and not her. Well, that was a revelation to me because I always thought it was a dog
specific
that ran it. Actually, but found Fortune get in the shower, or in Sean's case, the bath.
Do you run baths?
Man, I'm a bath freak. Yeah.
So am I. I just don't have one anymore because I'm an adult.
Oh, burn.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't have one? I mean, like,
because I grew up during the freaking droughts in Melbourne. And so we got rid of our bath and put a shower in because we couldn't afford to run a full bath anymore.
Well,
I love bubbles as much as the next guy and Epsom salts and all that shit. But you know,
look, I wasn't using it when the water restrictions were on. Okay, I didn't actually have that particular. Well, I was going to say fetish. It's not quite a fetish.
I don't know if I believe you. I feel like you're the reason we had the droughts.
I don't have them every day.
All right, I digress. Keep going with the prompts.
All right. Well, I finished anyway.
The shit that comes to your mind when you can't sleep. I think that was the last one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Liz.
He knows more about what's going on here than
I
do. I
studied this so much, man. You have no idea.
Yeah, I did miss
it. All over this.
Okay. So I should give a shout out to some of those people too. There was Joe, Rebecca, Claire Page. Thank you. Miana, and Liz, and I think I'm forgetting someone. I'll think of that in a minute.
Benjamin.
Benjamin.
Yeah.
Benny. Benny Solar. I did call him. I did give him a shout out before. There was another one there that wasn't in that feed, I think. There was one about an octopus. Anyway.
Damn it.
I've got to find that one because that's in my poem.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, now I feel bad because it's not in mine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sucked in.
Literally, because it's an octopus. That's all right. I just nailed
it
there.
So you didn't get all the prompts.
No, I just made that joke. And that, as far as I'm concerned, means octopus taken care of.
Well, yeah, okay. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
going to give you that. I'm going to give you that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do this.
Me first? All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So to begin with, I want to first say that three of the prompts are implied. Poetry is how I'm trying to fill the huge crushing void.
Right.
I am cripplingly busy most of the time, and somehow I still manage to achieve writing this. And three, I read these prompts in the toilet and started thinking of this piece in that toilet before I left on the train, because that's when I got
amazing.
Those. So that's those three. The rest are in the actual piece.
Okay.
Oh, jeez. Trick or treat. Lace my candy with Xanax so I can get to sleep. I'm tired of triers who want to nick my seat, so fire for the spiders who aren't fit to creep. It's a day for dress up and inhibitions weakened. I don't drink so my thoughts pinball and deepen. You're all excited by the prospect of a scary season, but I'm forever in costume dressed as my demons. I'm stuck in a loop with no feedback close. My cowboy hat contents are an old town road hoax. If the hurt is spherical and I turn pain to jokes, then I'll swallow balls till I die like I'm Pac-Man's ghost.
Yes.
My notebook's just ear ticks I'm keeping at bay. I meant to say earworms, but missing prompts will bring me shame and disgrace. My dog's name is Craig. He's always walking away. See how he likes it when I shut down his Instagram page. Jokes aside, let's bring it back to a real note. The good die young. That's the old quote. The old and the gold grilled seem to stay afloat. And I'm watching where they die as I'm stealing all their teeth when they finally croak. That's all I got. Come at me!
Outstanding!
Yeah!
Outstanding!
Yeah.
I think I was just trying to count the prompts. I think there's like 14 prompts there that you've set a world record, my friend.
I think
I've used like most about
I'm king
six
of this podcast now.
Seven.
Yeah. Like, the bar is set high and I will not be removed from my throne. We shall not be
Who
moved.
Who invited this guy on the show? All right. So this is quite on point actually, because it's all about having baths.
About what?
About being in the bath. Yeah.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
So that is one of those prompts about the thoughts that come to you in the shower/bath. And the other one I used was Tess sent a prompt that she said what are those tattoos called? Stick poke tattoo of a squid. And the other prompt was one of Liz's, which is about the good dying young.
Okay.
And it doesn't have a title, and I haven't even finished it, so I'm going to have to freestyle the ending.
Oh, shit.
So let's see how this goes. In the bath is my happy place. I don't know why exactly. There's a comfort in being embraced by a body of water. I put on some music, close my eyes, and drift. And last time I was in the bath with my eyes closed, I had a flashback to bath time as a child, and I distinctly remembered a recurring fantasy I would have. I would put my head below the water, and in my mind a trapdoor would appear in the side of the bath. After a gentle nudge, a door would open and I would slip through it, and on the other side was the ocean floor, and there I would be in an octopus's garden in the shade. My father would play the Beatles sometimes. He was obsessed with music, an obsession that was gratefully passed down to me. And for a time, I was also obsessed with that stupid song. And in my mind, the octopus's garden was fluorescent neon coloured, and there was a one-man band octopus playing all the instruments.
But at the same time, I also owned a small toy replica of the White Lotus Esprit underwater car from the 1977 James Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. And sometimes I'd be driving this car around and be encounters with villains amongst the seaweed jungle, and I would shoot the bad guys with my spear gun, and their blood would bloom like liquid roses from their chests. And sometimes I'd play cards with a squid, and when he'd lose, he would shoot black, a cloud of black ink. And when the ink disappeared, all the money would be gone from the table. And sometimes I would notice beyond the fringes of the octopus garden, a cemetery down deep below on the ocean floor with little fish-shaped headstones. And it always gave me a little chill to see it beyond the coloured fringes of the garden. And sometimes now I think about my father, who died 20 years ago. 20? 30. My goodness. Years ago. And I sometimes see his headstone in the octopus's garden in the shade.
Done.
So
that half freestyled as well. That's intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful, man.
It's like riding a bike in the dark and then you're in there, but I got there. So thank you so much to all those muses and to this fucking genius sitting opposite me who used every single prompt. It's still blowing my tiny little mind.
We did it.
We did it. You did it. You really did it.
Yeah, man.
Wow. I'm so impressed right now.
So am I, man. That's a great piece.
Okay, so let's move on to the world of Whelan.
Wow.
I got nothing.
Awesome.
I'm DJing, but I don't really have any. Well, we're getting to the pointy end of the year now. There's not many. But I also have a terrible memory, so I'm really quite concerned someone out there will be listening to this saying, why aren't you fucking plugging that gig I booked you for? I'm pretty sure I don't have any poetry gigs until the end of the year. I don't know. That was a really great World of Whelan segment. What's going on in your world?
My world is also slowing down for the end of the year. I think this is typical for most poets. It's kind of, gigs are kind of drying up to kind of come Christmas season and schools are finishing their term four. So there's none of that either. So I'm staying busy and thinking and concocting up some new stuff for next year. Can I hopefully have a couple of different shows launching next year? But right now my entire focus is on the Dirty 30, because that's kind of what's sustaining me right now, and a lot of work and love and sweat and tears and all that in there. Besides that, it's just, you know, staying mentally healthy and, you know, addressing myself and taking care of myself and my family and all that.
That's good to hear. You certainly look very healthy.
Thank you.
You look fantastic.
Thank
actually.
You. Stop.
I just realized that if you ever have a podcast and you have a segment where you just sort of tell your listeners what's going on, you know, it have a really great acronym.
Yeah.
The world of Abdul Hamoud is WOA.
It's
WOAH.
I have to get a different sound effect for that.
WOA.
Does that? I'm not going to reveal his name because I don't.
Wow.
Yeah. He doesn't. Yeah. Does he have a woes? Does he just wows? Damn it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Look, I'm gonna have to find a different sound effect.
Which Yeah, you should do that.
I should.
You know, you've outshone me. So now.
Oh no, I haven't. Come on.
I'm just saying, the writing's on the wall. I think you'd be fantastic to have a regular podcast. I'm just putting it
in the works. It is in the works. I'm definitely going to have one at some point, and I will let everyone know.
Great.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a hoot and a half. Yeah.
That's fun.
A lot of fun, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you to all of you glorious listeners. I love you very much. So one thing people often do on podcasts, which I never remember to do is I ask people to maybe give a review on iTunes or something like that. Mm-hmm. I've heard it's good for some reason.
I actually
set up an alert in the early days of podcasting. You know, I say it like I'm a veteran. I've been doing it a fucking year or something. You get a bit
the early days of 2018. Yeah,
you know, like so. I joined this thing that would send you alerts when you get reviews of your podcast, right? Mm. But it sends me alerts when I don't get any as well. So
whoa, that's depressing.
It's pretty brutal. I should change the settings or something.
No one's talked about you this week, Sean.
So I regularly get this email. You've got no reviews. Yeah. This
month. Fuck you.
I don't even open them up anymore.
Yeah.
So please give
review
me a reason
this guy.
To open up those emails.
Absolutely. Review Sean. Follow Sean.
Thank
you. Get him on his socials. Get me on my socials. Follow me.
That's
Instagram,
right.
Facebook. Get the book. Get Sean's stuff. Listen to him. He's amazing.
Right. I could not have done a better outro.
I'm
going to
do your marketing from now on, bro.
Thank you.
Shameless.
Thank you. And so all I've got left to do now is thank my producer, Derek Myers, and Castaway Studios, without whom we would not exist. Beautiful Castaway Studios, and my generous supporter, Lux Country, who make beautiful merch. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Wheeling out.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.